You want to know the truth?
You can't handle the truth!
About movies.
Every Thursday on Breakfast, Maggie is joined by Graham Tuckett at 9:15 to chat this week's film releases. Check in with the latest blockbusters, indie darlings, Oscar bait and guilty pleasures. It's the perfect companion to your movie watching experience. Stay informed before you settle into the snug surroundings of the cinema. Every Thursday at 9:15 a.m.
Proudly supported by Wellington's own Lighthouse Cinema.
There we have it. It's so weird still, like, hearing that intro. I don't know, the first time I listened to you and Maggie do the film review, I heard, like, I just happened to be listening to the radio, and I heard it, and I was thinking, who was that guy? I know that person, and it wasn't until the end, like, oh, you idiot. You did that ad.
I get exactly the same thing when I'm doing a show, and I'm like, oh, yeah, promo, slide it up, and suddenly your own voice comes booming out of the speakers.
Yeah.
And I can never remember the ones I do. Like,
I
remember the words, I can't remember what they're called, you know? Anyway.
And by the time James makes it all pretty, it's...
James makes it pretty. Yeah. James throws the fairy dust on
Yeah, right.
Do I really sound like that?
Well, welcome, Graham.
Nice to be back.
Film review again.
You're sounding really, really good, man. Lovely, lovely.
Thank you. I'm having fun today. Mm-hmm. It's nice and warm in the studio.
And just so much James Brown coming out of the speakers.
I reckon, like, people can tell if I like a song or not, because then the volume goes up in the studio.
Yeah, and it's just like there's no back announcing. It's just like right to the very end, and you savor every last drop of the song.
Oh, no, you have to.
And then leave a second of pause and, like, respect the music and then play another track.
It's Godfather.
Exactly. It's like me when I play Stevie Wonder. It's like nothing's interrupting that. You know? Yeah.
I should play some by the end of the show.
Oh,
I will.
I've got some here if you want.
I got some too. I'll surprise you.
Of course you have. Of course you have. Hey, was movies?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sidetrack. That's right.
I know. Both of us having too much fun actually doing a show together for once instead of one after the other.
Right.
Green Book. Let's talk about Green Book. Green Book is... Man, stars... Mahershala Ali, from Moonlight, the man who won the Academy Award for an incredible breakout role in Moonlight. I think he was an actor that most people in the world are probably mostly unfamiliar with before then.
He was on House of Cards, wasn't he, as well?
He'd done the first season or so. Yes, he's an attorney in House of Cards.
Yeah, the lobbyist.
He's the attorney. He becomes a lobbyist. He played a sort of pivotal but fairly minor role in House of Cards.
Mm.
That broke him out. He got the role in Moonlight, which went on to win the Academy Award for Best Picture. He won the Academy Award for Best...
Yeah, and he was great.
I think he got... Was it
supporting actor?
Supporting actor, not lead actor. He's a beautiful, beautiful presence.
Mm.
Mahershala Ali opposite Viggo Mortensen, who needs no introduction to New Zealand audiences.
I've heard of him.
Viggo, now 60 years old.
No.
I found it hard to believe as well. Like, whoever is looking after his hair and his skin, I want to be in touch with that person.
Right.
And based surprisingly closely on a true story. In 1962, there was at the time, very, very famous black jazz / classical pianist by the name of Don Shirley, honorary doctorate Don Shirley, who was based in New York. He actually lived in an artist apartment in Carnegie Hall for 40, 50 years of his life.
Cool.
And he took it upon himself to organize a tour with himself and his trio, his bass player and his clarinetist, I think, was the other part of the trio.
Mm.
And the three of them to tour the Deep South, which was basically black musicians, unless they were playing blues and jazz to a majority black audience, did not go south of the Mason-Dixon line in 1962 because it simply was not worth the aggravation, it was not worth the trouble, and it wasn't worth the sheer unpleasantness.
Yeah.
But as one of the characters says in his films, like, Don Shirley could have stayed on, he could have stayed in Manhattan and made three times the money every night without the hassle, but he decided, no, I'm taking this show to Alabama. I'm going to take this show to Kentucky. I'm going to show them an urbane, educated, overwhelmingly talented black man playing their music better than their people can play it to them. And it was like that was the subtlety of his protest. And it's a beautiful thing that he did. But basically he needed a bodyguard to do it. He needed a man who was, you know, the position was advertised as chauffeur.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy that got it was called Tony Lip. He was a sort of low-level mafia associate who had a massive reputation for being head of security at the Copacabana nightclub in Manhattan, where he could deal with any situation. He could certainly bring the fists if he had to, but he's also a very, very smart operator who could deal with the politics of human interaction when he needed to as well. He wasn't just some bouncer. He was the head of security at the Copacabana.
He's not like Roadhouse. Just pew, pew,
pew, pew. Oh, bring back Patrick Swayze. And so the true story: the two of them, with the other two musicians, traveling in a separate car, hit the road for a couple of months, and they went down. They went through Alabama. They went through Kentucky. They went through Louisiana. They had a pile of trouble. They were arrested by corrupt. I don't know. Misguided police, I guess you'd call it, the police of the day. They ran into all the rednecks and racists that you would have expected them to run into. They had some triumphant times, and they came back. I guess the heart of the story is that when they left, and again, this is true, Tony Lip, or we should call him by his real name, and there's an ongoing joke in the film that nobody can pronounce his real name, Tony Vallelonga. Beautiful Italian name, Sicilian Italian.
It almost sounds like Tongan name, Vallelonga.
It does sound like an Italian, it's a Tongan name. Yeah. It's the Tonga Sicilian connection coming out.
There we go.
There it is. We've established a fucker papa.
All right.
Tony Vallelonga, played by Viggo Mortensen, in his own words and in the words of his son, who eventually wrote like the memoir of the road trip that this book is based on. He was himself a complete redneck when he started the trip, but he needed the money. This trip was paying $125 a week plus expenses. Yeah. That was very good money for 1962. He said he left thinking he was in some way shaming himself by being employed by a black man, and came back 2 months later, the two of them, the fastest of friends. And in actual life, the tour then continued for another 8 to 12 months around different parts of the states. And they remained fast friends for the rest of their lives, despite Vallelonga's bigotry and Don Shirley's maybe reticence about exactly who he was, who this ignorant cracker was that he was sharing a car with.
Yeah.
It's definitely a feel-good story. It's a real crowd pleaser. It is beautifully performed. Yeah. And I think it's about 95% beautifully written. It's co-written and directed by Peter Farrelly, who, like, to this day is probably still better known for stuff like Shallow Hal and Dumb and Dumber. Like, he's not...
Really?
There's Something About Mary. Like, this is kind of where he comes from. But he's also... he's certainly not a stupid director. Like, he's always had the ability to tell a decent story, but he's been mining the mines, ploughing the fields of comedy up till now. And I think he does a pretty good job with it. I think in the hands of a black director, I think a different story would have emerged, or a story with the nuance and the emphasis on different aspects of the story.
Yeah.
There's one, maybe two scenes, or sort of a brace of connected scenes in it, revolving around an ongoing joke about diet, which I think were frankly tone deaf, and I think kind of revealed the fact that all of the three screenwriters, plus including Farrelly himself, they're all very experienced, good comedy and drama writers, but they're all white. And I think there's moments in there, you know, far be it from me to consider myself qualified, but I think there's a few moments in there that a black writer would have gone, no, you're missing the point there.
Yeah.
You're playing this for jokes, and this isn't jokes right now. That said, I can't unreservedly recommend The Green Book, but it's a film. It's definitely got its heart in its right place. It tries very hard, and it's an undeniably very, very entertaining film. I'd be interested in other people's takes on it. It certainly hasn't been polarizing. I think 90% of people seem to absolutely love it, and there's a 10%, and I consider myself within that 10%, who go solid 9 out of 10. But there's a few moments in there that are, I think the phrase tone deaf gets overused.
Yeah.
But there's a few moments in there I would have loved to have known what a black scriptwriter would have made of a couple of little directions that it takes. But they're minor, they're minor scenes within a greater whole.
Yeah.
I was curious about where the film got its title from. The Green Book, it turns out, was a guide to traveling in the Deep South that was put out by a publishing company under the name of Mr. Green, and it was a list of the places where black people were allowed to stay in the southern states that were not segregated hotels and motels. Wow. The fact that such a book actually existed, and didn't just exist in 1962, it was still being published in 1968. You forget occasionally just what a foreign country America is.
But not even that, a bit like at the time when it was released, people would be like, the attitude that they would have. Well, of course this book exists. Like,
yeah.
It's essential.
I know.
Why wouldn't we have it? And now it's just unfathomable.
The attitude of the attitude of the white characters in the film is, oh, this is a great public service. It's for your safety.
Yeah.
Not it's to justify our blatant racism.
Which isn't even that long ago. It boggles the mind.
1968. This book was still in publish. I was alive in 1968.
Mm.
You know? We were so used, I think, to thinking of North America as being like the peak of Western civilization. You know, America the beautiful, America the great. Oh, America, yeah. They put the man on the moon. They did this, they did that. They've got the most money. And we have this default that North America is kind of like the most, until very recently,
yeah.
It's like the most advanced and civilized of all the Western democracies.
Because they keep telling us that,
yeah.
I guess.
But in 1968... Yeah. You still had to have a book to tell someone who had more melatonin in their skin where they could stay without being lynched. It's like that is still the reality of the country, and I think we forget that at our peril, that America comes from a very, very polarized and flawed and divided place.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, it's led by someone who'd quite happily take it right back there. You know. Anyway, Green Book. It's definitely got a share of laughs. It's got a share of thought-provoking and provocative moments. It's extremely moving in a couple of places. It's a little bit contrived, and there's a few moments, and I go, could have handled that, just that little moment there a bit better, but not enough to ruin the film. So, Viggo Mortensen is being seriously talked up as a contender. Like, he'll probably make the shortlist.
So it's that time of year, isn't it?
Best supporting, it is that time of year.
Yeah.
I think... I hate to say it, but Bradley Cooper's probably got a lock on male lead for A Star Is Born, which a film I've now seen twice, and I hated it even more the second time I saw it. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. It doesn't really grab me. There were times when I was going to go, and then it just fell through, but I have no sense of urgency to go and see it.
It's like, I've seen the Kris Kristofferson, Barbra Streisand iteration of it, and that was like the third remake of the film.
Mm.
This is the fourth, maybe fifth. I mean, you can argue about other films that weren't actually called Star Is Born that actually were Star Is Born. Mm. And I think Kris Kristofferson eats Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
So that was, Oscar run-up. And Christian Bale in Vice playing Dick Cheney.
That's on my list.
That's who I'm giving it to. Yeah. Like the Graham Tuckett Oscar goes to Christian Bale for playing Dick Cheney.
Mm.
It's just amazing. Not just because he's unrecognizable.
I mean,
we tend to... I think we hand out, especially Best Actor Academy Awards, get handed out kind of for prosthetics nowadays rather than the actual performance. But the performance itself is amazing. I thought Gary Oldman playing Winston Churchill wasn't really that impressive. That was an Academy Award for Best Makeup, not Best Actor.
It was like a theatre production. He's just very animated.
Perfectly set. It was like a parody of something rather than. Whereas Christian Bale as Dick Cheney in Vice. Like, thunderously good film and relevant film and funny as hell. But I just, not for a second did I not think, did I forget that it was, did I not think it was actually Dick Cheney on the screen.
I think Gary Oldman's...
The voice and the presence, he nails it.
Yeah, Gary Oldman's performance, it reminds me of, sometimes when somebody, when there's an impression of a famous person, that becomes the go-to impression that people do. So lots of times when people would try to impersonate Cosby, for example, they might do the Eddie Murphy one, which was ridiculous and over the top, Or,
you get into sort of a close... I often think this about, like, war movies as well. Nobody says, was your war film realistic?
Mm.
We say, did it remind us of Saving Private Ryan? Because we accept that as that's now the benchmark for realism.
Yeah.
Whereas we don't know. But we tend to, like, if we see a war movie and go, oh, the battle scenes are amazingly realistic, we're not actually comparing them to drama or to documentary anymore.
No.
We're comparing them to just another fictionalization because stuff gets to set the benchmark in exactly the same way as you said.
Yeah.
Film called Cold War starts today, which may or may not be a complete lock on Best Foreign Language Oscar. It'll be between that and Roma. Same director as a film called Ida that came out about 3 years ago. If you saw Ida, you'll be just have bought your ticket already. It looks absolutely astonishing, and it's got a jazz soundtrack, so I'm there. So that's Cold War, which is also at Lighthouse Cuba as of, I think, today. Green Book opens today in a bunch of places, including Lighthouse. The Favourite is still playing, which is just about my favourite film of the last 12 months. Sort of like black comedy set in 17th century England.
Yep.
Doesn't sound as funny as it is, but it's directed by the same writer-director as The Lobster and Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Is he Where is he from? Like some Northern European country, eh?
Please don't ask me to pronounce his name. It's just impossible. It's like
we just know.
It's like every letter in the alphabet repeated in a jumble. That's the guy's name.
I have to go check it out. I thought the lobster was hilarious.
If you like the lobster, you will adore this. And it's slightly more accessible than the lobster. It's a slightly more sort of straight ahead story. I'm trying to find his name now, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to turn it up. Wait. Here we go. I've got to get this right. I can't stand people who can't get people's names. It just seems so disrespectful.
Yeah.
Yorgos Lanthimos. I think he's Greek Cypriot, but I might be wrong.
Oh, that sounds right to me.
All right. Cheers, Caleb.
Thank you very much. Next week.